Good evening.
Good evening.
Y'all all right?
Good evening.
Let's try that again. Good evening.
Good evening.
All right. Great to be with you tonight. Appreciate your presence here so that we can worship God together. I hope that everyone has had a good afternoon. I do appreciate the positive comments after the sermon this morning. A few of you limped to the back. Brian Hartman came back there limping and said that I had stepped on his toes too much. But I do appreciate the positive comments following the sermon. One thing that I wanted to make mention, and this is something I've already talked to our 6th through 12th grade this morning, but I wanted to mention it publicly, especially for parents of children in that age range. Something we're going to be doing here in a few months, and it's still a few months out before we start the study, and I'll explain why that is here in just a moment. We're going to be studying a book from Lads to Leaders. It's called the Defender Series. It's a four-part series that we'll study one part each year. But it's basically a study of Christian evidences, which actually lines up perfectly with what I was going to start doing in the youth class anyway. We'll wait till probably about the middle of November to start that. And the reason being, it's a 13-week course. And at the end of that course, students in the class will get online and take a test online. And everyone that scores 80% or above on that test will then get a medal as a result of that. And as I was looking at it online, making sure I understood everything about it, the test is not offered until like towards the end of February and into March. And so I don't want to start that study now and have a lot of time between when we finish and when they take the test. And so we'll start that study somewhere towards the end of November, middle of November, somewhere right in there. And so if you have kids, 6th to 12th grade, be great to have them in there. And even if they don't want to, even if they decide they don't want to go to convention, still be good to be in there to study the material and then just take the test to see what they do. I'm not going to say who it was, Dr. Hunt, but in our meeting, someone said something about that if they don't do good on the test, then that might be the teacher's fault. I don't think it'd be the teacher's fault. I'm just saying, I think it might be the student's fault. But I'm looking forward to teaching that, and if you have kids in that age range, that have them here on Sunday morning so that we can study that together. You know, we live in a world where evil occurs on an all too frequent basis. There's all different times. You turn on the news, you look on social media, there's always, it seems like, a never-ending list of things that are happening that are negative or that are bad. And it's not even counting the numerous things that probably do take place on a daily basis that you and I never even know about. And so the question becomes, what is the Christian's response when evil happens? How should we respond to those things that take place in the world? And really, as we look at this sermon, the four things we're going to notice together, really you don't even have to look at it from the standpoint of responding just to evil. I was thinking about the presidential election that's coming up. And of course, that'll be a heated contest. Lots of things will be said. And how do we respond to that? How, as Christians, should we react to the things that take place in this world? Two quick things on the front end that I want us to notice before we get into our main points. Number one, the Christian response is not the world's response. And I think that's important for us to understand right on the front end. The Christian's response, it's not the world's response. The way the world would respond to these things, that's not how God would have us to respond. And so it's important to note, and I guess that should be self-explanatory, but sometimes it's not. As Christians, we are to be different, and so our response is not going to be the world's response. Secondly, the Christian response should be a biblical response. I hear sometimes when it comes to the use of Facebook and different things, well, it's not a faith issue, it's not a spiritual issue. But friends, how I act and react to the world around me is always a faith issue. Because I am always a Christian. And so those things matter. Four things that we want to notice together that talk to us, that speak to us on how we should respond to the world around us. Number one, we should respond with love. We should respond with love. In Matthew chapter 5, shortly following the Beatitude, Jesus begins a list of contrasts. If you look at chapter 5 in a snapshot, we have the Beatitudes in the first 11 verses. Then, of course, verses 12 through 16, we have the talk of our influence in the world around us to be salt and to be light. And then in verses 17 through 20, Jesus talks about the fact that he came to fulfill the law. And then he begins this list of contrasts. And we see that in that he says, "You have heard that it has been said," and he'll give what's been said in the law. And then he contrasts that, "But I say to you," and he does this six different times over the course of the rest of chapter 5. And in those six instances, he talks about a lot of important things. He talks about our anger. He talks about sexual purity and lust. He talks about divorce and remarriage. He talks about our speech and the taking of oaths. He talks about retaliation. And then the one that we want to key in on at the end of chapter 5, in verses 43 to the end of the chapter, which is verse 48, he talks about loving your enemies. He begins in verse 43, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." Friends, that's the world's response right there. That's how the world responds to those who are enemies, with hate. Verse 44, "But." The word "but," of course, the word of contrast. "But I say to you," Jesus says, that's not the way it is. Here's the way it should be. "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Now, friends, that is tough. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that that's an easy commandment, because that's not. But it is a commandment that we can obey. Because God doesn't give us, Jesus did not give us any commandments that we are not capable of obeying. And maybe sometimes we've had trouble with this idea of loving our enemy because maybe we don't understand the word love that's being used here. The word love here is the Greek word agape. Now, if the word had been phileo, I would admit to you, I don't know if that's doable. Phileo is a Greek word that means brotherly love. I don't know that I could love an enemy with the same love that I love some of my good friends here. If it had said storge, I don't know that that's possible. Because storge is a family type of love. I don't know that I can love my enemy like I love Micah and my children. If it had said eros, eros is a romantic type of love. I don't see how I could love my enemies with that type of love. But it's none of those things. It's the Greek word agape. Vine's Dictionary of New Testament Words said, "Christian love, whether expressed toward the brethren or toward men generally, is not an impulse from the feelings. It does not always run with the natural inclinations, nor does it spend itself only upon those for whom some affinity is discovered." Here's what this love does. Love seeks the welfare of all. It works no ill to any. Love seeks opportunity to do good to all men, and especially toward them that are the household of the faith. This is a love that wants the best for the other person. And what's the best thing for my enemy? That they learn the gospel. That they become a Christian. Because you know what happens then? I no longer have an enemy. What do I have? I have a brother or a sister. That's why I can love them with agape love, because it's a love that doesn't depend on them. It's the same word that's used when Paul talks about in the book of Romans that while we were still sinners, how God loved us. While we were at odds with God, God loved us. How's that possible? Because it's a love that didn't depend on us. It was a love that came from Him. And the same thing is true when it comes to loving our enemies. That love does not depend on them and their actions. It depends on me and my actions. Love for them. Pray for them. Why? Notice verse 45. so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Here's why to be sons of God. You think about God's only begotten Son. What did he do with his enemies? He loved them. He prayed for them. He sat on the cross as they are spitting upon him and mocking him and cheering his death. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. That's what the Son of God did. That's what we, as God's children, should do as well. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If we don't understand a little bit about the society in which the Jews lived, this statement by Jesus might not make a whole lot of sense. The tax collectors were Roman employees. And many of the Jews looked at these individuals as betrayers. They had betrayed the Jews. And so they looked down upon them. And Jesus says, these people you look down upon, hey, if you just love those who love you, they do that. In verse 47, he does the same thing again. If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Here's another group that the Jews looked down upon, the Gentiles. He said, if you only greet your brethren, the Gentiles over here do that. He says, if this is your mindset, you only love those who love you, you only have good things for those who have good things for you, the world does that. He says, that's why you need to love your enemies, so that you can be my children. Verse 48, you therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. When evil happens, when difficulties arrive, number one tonight, as Christians, we need to respond with love. Now the next 3 points that we're going to notice is it really help us to respond with love. Number two, we need to respond with prayer. We need to respond with prayer. When evil comes, when difficulties arise, Christians need to pray. Anytime something happens on social media explodes with comments. There are people angry that something happened, whatever the something is. And then there are people that are angry because this group is angry about what took place. And then the angry people get even angrier because the people who are angry about their angriness are not angry about what the original angry people were angry about. Did you get that? Well, that's how much sense it makes when you read it on social media too. If we would spend as much time in prayer as we do in sharing our opinions, it might make a real difference. And let me very quickly, while we're on the topic of social media, take this little side trip. Before you share that cute meme or that statement or that political post, take a few minutes to research and see if it's even accurate. And if you say, well, I don't know how to do that, well, then don't post it. Don't share it. Well, I'm going to share it because it might be true. Let me put that statement into different words and see if it still sounds right to you. I'm going to share that gossip because it might be true. Sound as good now? Friends, there are going to be people lost eternally because of the share button on Facebook. If it's not true, or we can't verify that it's true, then as Christians we shouldn't say it. We should pray about it and then move on. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44, the passage that we just said, he said, pray for those who persecute you. As the passage shows, we aren't just praying for the ones that are hurting. We're praying for the ones who are doing the hurting. Because those individuals need our prayers as well. How do we need to respond? We need to respond with love. We need to respond with prayer. Number three, we need to respond with kindness. Leaving Matthew chapter 5, we want to go over to Romans chapter 12 for a few minutes. Romans chapter 12, we're going to be looking at verses 9 through 21. And as we hit Romans chapter 12, Paul has left the... When Paul, most of his letters, if you look at it, there is a doctrinal section at the beginning where he deals with different doctrines and different teachings of Christianity. And then there's what we would call the practical section of the book, where he begins to talk about, here's what all this looks like in practice. And that's what we're in when we come to chapter 12 of the book of Romans. We're in that practical section. He says, let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Stay away from it. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. I love this next statement. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in the Spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. And seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be conceited. Y'all, you want a list of things to work on? Romans 12, 9 through 21 gives you a lot. In verse 17, he goes on to say, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. Notice what's about to be said. It's all about showing kindness to this individual. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Note something about this verse. It does not say, do it so that you heap burning coals on his head. Okay, that's not the motivation of why we do it. The verse is saying this is the result of doing it, but it's not the reason that we do it. Does that make sense? All right, thank y'all for nodding. I was just about to wonder, and then some of you started nodding. This isn't our reason for doing it, but it is the response of it being done. 21 gives our reason for doing this. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. There's our reason for doing this. Our kindness, the good that we do, can overcome the evil that we experience. The hope is that the evil one will be overcome by the kindness that we show. How should we respond? We respond with love. We respond with prayer. We respond with kindness. And then finally, number four tonight, we respond with hope. We respond with hope. Too often times when evil occurs, Christians and non-Christians alike respond with fear. And that's a natural thing. But instead of responding fear as Christians, we should strive to respond with hope. We sang the song many times, this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door. And I can't feel at home in this world anymore. I'm sure all of us have felt that way at times. We see things going on in the world around me and we're like, man, I'm glad this isn't my permanent place. Evil men may take my land, may take my life, but they cannot take my Lord. That was how Christians in the first century endured such horrible persecution. They kept that hope of heaven. There's a book called Fox's Book of Martyrs. It records the deaths of many Christians in the first and second century, things that happened to them, and it records their faithfulness through all of that. They remained steadfast despite the evil that was happening, and they did that because they held on to that hope of heaven. They knew that when this life came to a close, there was something far better that awaited them. In Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 19, the Hebrew writer talks about that hope. He says, we have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain. That hope of heaven is an anchor, friends, that we can hold to. When evil comes, when bad things happen, how should the Christian respond to evil? We should respond with love. We should respond with prayer. We should respond with kindness, and we should respond with hope. And friends, in so doing, we may just make a difference in the world around us. You can make a difference in your life this evening. If you're not a Christian, you can make a difference by becoming one. By believing in Jesus, turning from sin, by putting Christ on in baptism. Or maybe you've done that and tonight you realize you've drifted away. Come back home. We need each other. We need God. We need Jesus. Do you have Him? Friend, if not, come right now as we stand and sing.